stupid. He comes across in front of me every single time he overtakes. Where does he want me to go off the track?
No!
Stop talking to me in the braking zone.
Thailand gets a F2 winner. George Russell breaks his duck. And John Eric Verne becomes a hometown winner. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Welcome to episode 137 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighbor host, Mr. Andre Harrison. Thanks for coming in, or in this case, coming back, because this is the second part of our doubleheader taping. And in this segment, we will be talking all about Formula 2 in Baku with another pair of crazy races. And we'll be talking about the Formula E Paris E-Prix as well, and the future talk regarding the series itself. Mario Kart was mentioned. May the good Lord help us all. In the corner, as always, as well, is Mr. Ryan King. Hello again, sir.
Hey, I'm ready for this wild, wild weekend in Baku.
He's not dead yet, thank God for that. And also, RJ O'Connell is with us again. Hello, sir.
Hello, everybody. Yes, it's been quite a week. By the time you listen to this, three things will be happening. I will either be celebrating the fact that my beloved Nashville Predators have made it to the Western Conference Finals for the second consecutive year in the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, or I will be very sad that they've been beaten by a Winnipeg Jets team that also finished with the second best record, and they're getting met, and the first and second best teams in the entire league are getting matched up in the second round of the playoffs. Or I will be very stressed as the series goes the distance to a full seven games. Lots of brown liquor will be consumed.
JETS, 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 Jets
suck. Sorry, had to do it.
Yes, any child at the NFL draft in a Jets jersey, I officially deem that as child abuse.
No.
it's like, I still remember roasting a good friend of mine, Kingsley, who's a Jets fan from the UK himself, during the draft on this past week. And I distinctively say, "Oh, the hype about which quarterback we're going to take." I just said to him, "You're a Jets fan. You only draft L's." and like, hey, you guys got Sam Darnold, and I think that's going to be pretty good for you guys, actually.
I don't know. I have bad feelings about any time anyone drafts a quarterback.
I'm just glad that the Buffalo Bills, after the saga of the very problematic offensive lineman Richie Incognito, who stepped away from the game, drafted somebody with a much less checkered hist. Hold on, Josh Allen did what now in high school? Oh, no.
I mean, just like random tangent. Nothing is going to make me feel comfortable about Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald being on the same team.
Oh, God. Oh, no. Oh, that's going to be all kinds of disgusting. That's not, like, also, what's kind of crazy as well is that in the UK now, like, we're getting four UK games again next season. Eagles-Jags is already sold out.
Yeah.
A Jags game is sold out.
Shad Khan might buy Wembley.
Yeah, I just, oof.
AFC Championship semi-finalists, and of course, London's team.
Yeah, decent matchup. Only three games, by the way. My apologies. Thanks for correcting me on that one, Henry. Yeah, so, God, that's going to be fun as well. Right, general housekeeping. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. There's a Dre Brief episode out right now talking about the Red Bull clashing in Baku. I'm also furiously crafting a second episode, which might even be out by the time this second part goes out. I'm working on it, King. I'm working on it. Hashtag vote for Valtteri. It's in the works, I promise, okay? Like, it's going to be me humbling myself to apologize. It's a Something I never do on this show. It's really annoying. Anyway, we're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. And if you want to follow our personal handles, you can at Harrison101HD, at Ryan Eric King, and at RJ O'Connell. And for $5, you can back us on Patreon at patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to both this show and to Bike Live. As mentioned, two shows went up this past week, all about either MotoGP in the Circuit of the Americas with Patrick, or you could listen to Krimenacker talking all about the World Superbike weekend at Assen, with obviously the Kawasaki splitting wins, the crazy Supersport race, and the even crazier Supersport 300 finish. So all of the Assen action in there as well. So check that out if you haven't already. $10 gets you access to our Discord server as well, so you can listen to these shows live as they go out. And trust me, a lot of fun stuff gets left in the cutting room for it. It's a great time, if I do say so myself. Gentlemen, should we go back to Baku? Because given they've welcomed us back.
Yes, welcome back. And back to Baku.
Indeed.
Let's do it.
Indeed, let's get back into Baku and let's talk about Formula 2 in Baku. Maybe after a couple more glasses of wine.
Oh dear, because yes, they took over, and it was definitely NXT TakeOver Baku. Because man, that Formula 2 race, guys.
Which one?
The exactly.
Yes. Time winner from pole position, but that doesn't even describe 1/10 of the things that happened. Or the sprint race where the guy who started 13th made up 8 places in one lap alone and came back to win in the final few laps.
Yes, is the answer to that question. Yes. This was a crazy set of races. We'll get into the feature race on the Saturday first, and yeah, as mentioned, we have our first ever Thailand Formula 2 race winner. Yay!
He's London-born, but he carries the flag of Thailand. He's Alexander Albon, and he just won the feature race at Baku for his very first Formula 2 victory.
Fantastic drive, I have to say as well. Was at the front pretty much all the way through. Looked in pretty solid control. Nice pass in the second half to take the victory as well. Just dodging all the chaos around him, especially directly behind him, because there was a lot of that going on as well, which we'll get into in a minute. But
everybody be stalling. Everybody be stalling.
I like that this is now like such a massively spoken problem now that like they're actually now trying to find works around. So I think there's now, they've said there's been 13 stalls since, like 14 stalled cars since the season started 4 races ago.
Ooh, good. Grief.
Yeah, like Autosport put out an article a couple of days ago, actually yesterday on the April 30th, saying F2 will test fixes for its start line dramas this week, trying to solve a scenario labelled wholly unsatisfactory by F1 race director Charlie Whiting. And our friend of the show, Josh Sutil, had a quote from George Russell saying, George says it best, this is the highest level below F1, and to have 14 cars stall in 4 races is just unheard of and unacceptable, really, for a championship of this standard.
He's not wrong.
No, he's not wrong at all. This is happening every round now. It is a pain. It's every race you're going to get at least 2 or 3 cars now that will not move off the start line, whether it be in the race itself or, as we saw in Bahrain, during the formation lap, like we got with Artem Markelov. It's not good, you guys. Like, do these cars just have a launch problem in general? I just don't get what's causing this.
Yeah, they genuinely have a launch problem because they're not as technically advanced as the Formula 1 cars, so you can't preload the clutch.
Ah.
And the fact that you also have to deal with that, these are non-hybrid turbo cars, so you have a shit ton of lag to deal with. Just, It's the perfect storm to have a vehicle stall on the grid. There's a reason why IndyCar doesn't do standing starts after experimenting with that for 1 year.
Ooh, yeah, that wasn't pretty.
Shout outs to Sebastian Saavedra and Mikhail Lotion.
Oof. Yeah, problematic to say the least. Yeah, like these cars have a big launch problem now. And again, we're averaging almost four cars a race at this point. It's not good. And the F2 field isn't particularly massive to begin with. And like, if 20% of your grid is stalling on the start line, not helpful. Oof.
Even your odds-on pick to win the title, Lando Norris, stalled it on the front row. Jack Aitken stalled it. Tadasuke Makino stalled it. Yep. That's three of them right there. And when the race actually got going, there were still no guarantees because Louis Delatraz's race only lasted a couple of corners. What is Delatraz going? He's going home early.
Put it in the wall, didn't he?
Yes. And, you remember when Kimi Raikkonen had a massive cone brown moment going into the final corner leading up to the main straightaway?
Uh-huh.
Well, Luca Giotto decided that he was going to let Kimi Raikkonen hold his beer.
Oh, God.
Because he pinned it at the same corner.
Yeah, he put it solidly in the wall.
Yeah, that wasn't a kiss.
Safety car. Yeah, that was not a kiss. That brings out a safety car. Which restarts on lap 5. Alexander Albon still holds the lead for now, for this point. Russell pits at the end of lap 6. Albon stays out one lap later, which cost him, putting him behind Russell, Nyck de Vries, and Roy Nissany, who are all effectively running 1, 2, and 3. Roy Nissany's race, by the way, ends when he does his best Nico Hülkenberg impersonation from the day later and crashes it at the same turn 4.
Duh.
So both Campos cars have now crashed out by this point, and we're only
about 17 laps in.
Nissany crashed a little bit later. In between, Madsen Gunther had also retired with wing damage, and a very, very audibly distressed Arjun Mayani retired after 7 laps after car problems.
Yo, we did. Yeah, we heard all about that in the pits. He was panicking in there. He was so frustrated. Because wasn't he running like 4th when the car started hiccuping?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was having a good day.
He was having a really good day. Like, oh, just, and then you can hear, like, it is audible. Like, he's just, it's despair on the radio when he's coming in. Just panicking, going, this can't be happening. No! And it's just, oh, it was brutal. Poor guy. Again, was running in 4th when he has to come through the pits. They tried to get it going again, but he just conks out at the end of the pit lane. And that was his day done, basically. Sad times. Sad times indeed.
Right. After all of this chaos ensues, Nissany's crash brings out a second safety car with Russell ahead of de Vries. So it looks like George Russell, who started this race, by the way, in 3rd, was able to clear out Xander Albon on strategy. It looked like this race was going to be his. Cue the restart on lap number 21.
Yes, and like Russell looks like he's going to hold on to the lead through turn 1, but all of a sudden a flying red and silver car comes towards the apex of turn 1. It's Nyck de Vries attempting an audacious dive bomb attempt into turn 1. It is unsuccessful, and Russell can only try and take evasive action. He very nearly hits the inside wall on the edge of turn 1, has to spin it back around the other way, and that effectively ends Russell's time at the front. Nyck de Vries was out of the race after. I think he hit the wall afterwards. Like, Russell was pissed on the radio, and it's hard to blame him, really. You all heard it. It was like, I think he described it as a hero move from Nyck de Vries.
Yeah, he was trying to be a hero at the first corner.
I think he was being very nice about that, quite frankly.
Right. That obviously, you know, cost George Russell a surefire win that he needed to get back up at Lando Norris, who, keep in mind, by this point had clawed his way back from having to start in the pit lane.
Indeed. I think he was up to about 7th by that point, wasn't he?
Oh, goodness, yeah. He was now well up in the top eight in points, which put him on good position to get a reverse grid pole for the sprint.
Yeah, Markelov's engine blew up as well in the later going as well, so that put him...
Oh, God, King, it blew.
Yeah. It was a...
Yeah, that was sack of potatoes blowing
up.
Oh,
yeah.
That... Oh, my God. It was a smoke show.
Someone wanted to celebrate April 20th just a few weeks later.
You smoke weed every day.
We get it, Artem. Your car vapes. In fact, it had covered most of, like, that second sector through, like, the high-speed corners, which I'm thinking, ooh, that's a pretty dangerous place for a smoke screen, isn't it?
Very. Very. What is it with these Russian time engines and blowing up? Jeez, that's the second time it's happened to Markelov now. Like, jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Like Markelov's by far one of the fastest guys out there, but his car is just not letting him be spectacular.
Sigh.
Out of all that, we still don't get another safety car. Alexander Albon is closing in on the new race leader, Antonio Foco, who quietly is having a pretty good race so far. After starting from 12th, he finds himself up in the lead until Alexander Albon, with five laps to go, makes a very timely move building enough of a lead to deny Fuoco the use of DRS in the next lap and putting it away for his very first Formula 2 victory. It's the first time a Thai licensed driver has ever won at this level. Also, Alexander Albon is on a handshake deal and does not have guaranteed funding for a full season.
Yikes.
And I'm thinking, how does this happen? Alexander Albon is pretty good.
Yeah.
How has he not gone full Tony Elias at Estoril 06 and have the commentators say, why don't you back the wagon up and just have Thailand pour a ton of money into this kid? He's talented, clearly.
Well, one commentator backed him because, quote, I first met him when he was eight at a charity karting event.
And which commentator was this, I wonder?
It's the new person on commentary this weekend.
I have feelings about, I have some feelings about, our new buddy Johnny Herbert. Alex Jakes and Johnny Herbert, Davide Valsecchi have been mainstays because Davide Valsecchi's enthusiasm is so, so infectious. Yeah. And then, because of their ties to Sky Sports, they have added a Johnny Herbert, a driver with experience of one of Formula 2's forerunners. People got the impression that Johnny Herbert was just there to play cheerleader for Lando and George, the only drivers on first name basis. I got the feeling that he was just there to tell all these kids exactly what they were doing wrong and to scald them for it, which I guess.
Yeah, and it kind of at every single opportunity he had the chance, he kind of, you know, shoved the point in your face that you're racing in front of the Formula One paddock, that this is the feeder series to Formula One. And if you're watching Formula 2, you kind of understand that, you know, being 2-1, we don't need it in our face at every corner.
Right. Oh, dear. Yeah, like Herbert is a big mood. I don't mean that in a good way. I'm not a fan of him on the comment. Like, I didn't mind him during Bahrain, where, you know, he was the third wheel for Jakes and Davide. He was more just harmless at that point, really. But him as an actual color commentator, I'm not a fan. Like, the fact as well, as RJ mentioned, the fact he refers all to the Brits on a first name basis is awkward, to say the least, compared to really good at surnames for everybody else. It's like, you're not even trying to be subtle about this, are you? Like, it's not great. I thought he was sloppy. I feel like, again, he likes to hammer these points home about it being a feeder series. Like, listen, we know it's a feeder series. And they're like F2 is not going to be reining in casual viewers or channel flippers. Like, the people that are watching this know it's a defeated series to F1. We don't need to have that rammed down our throats, and if anything, it makes your talent look slightly worse when you keep repeating that point left and right. So for me, I'm just bring back Davide, please. Just have Davide there for everyone. We don't need Johnny Herbert here. We just don't.
We missed you, Davide, during the sprint race. We really missed you. Can I just point out some recent highlights of Alexander Albon's CV? He had 5 podiums in his one and only season in Formula 3, finished 7th in the championship, actually did higher in the, was a rookie that year, finished ahead of the likes of Massimilian Gunther and Sanzio Ferrucci and Callum Ilott and Sergio Sete Câmara, who were all rookies that year. In 2016, he stepped up to GP3 series, where he was second only to his much more vaunted rookie teammate, Charles Leclerc. He did Formula 2 last season with ART, missed the Baku round because of a broken hand. So this is actually the first time he's driven this track in anger, and he won the feature race from pole position. And after the injury, in 2017, he had a sprint race podium in Austria and a sprint race podium at Yas Marina. Again, he was not expected to finish out the full season because of funding issues, which I believe is really a shame. Because he's definitely a capable driver from a country that could definitely use the windfall of a trailblazing Formula One driver from the country. He is still only 22 years old. He is very, very undervalued compared to his peers.
Yep, completely agree. It's a bit baffling to me that they've not got behind him, because, you know, especially when the pool is often quite shallow when it comes to motorsport prospects, like we saw with Venezuela, for example, with Pastor, before their economy fell apart. They can get behind certain dudes, and I don't see any reason why they couldn't in Albon's case, but maybe it's due to the fact it's more of a bike country still. That might be part of the problem.
Can we also talk about the fact that Jack Aitken was one of the stallers, and he came back from almost plumb last, finished second.
Incredible drive from Jack. Jesus. That was very impressive from Jack Aitken. Jesus. Made a couple of critical moves towards the end as well. That was sensational from young Jack. Brilliant stuff. Brilliant, brilliant drive indeed. Krimenacker, but on 4 wheels instead. So I thought that was quite fun. Also, Nick De Vries is cancelled. That's my decision. You'll never appear in Tuned again.
George Russell, you know, ends up in a situation where he has to lock up a wheel to make a corner, sees Nick De Vries doing a drive bomb, has to let off the brakes. They both run wide, and both their races over.
And out of all this, Lando Norris salvages a 6th place finish after being one of the stallers.
Yeah, Lando's pretty good at this whole driving thing, isn't he? just a hunch. Yes.
It'd play out slightly differently in the sprint race, though.
Yeah. Of course, what a shame it was that Britain just has no luck whatsoever on this feature race. Despite the fact that your top 2 drivers were both bone in London, just no luck whatsoever. No luck. Can't imagine why that would go ignored. Can't imagine why. Can we also talk about the fact that Roberto Meri won reverse sprint pole by his 8th place finish? Can we also talk about the fact that Roberto Meri is still here?
He is still a thing.
He is still in the league, and he still has feathered and lethal hair.
Yeah, like the rent, he always pays the rent on time, every month. Mehi is still here, and he has every right to be here. Yes, I did see that, and I was like, oh god, Mehi's at the front. This should be fun. It was fun, but not for the reasons you'd expect. Tell us why, RJ.
Because MP Motorsport quickly converted their front row lockout into 2 very slow starts.
Yeah, not stalls, but close.
Bogging down, to say the least.
And right. And it puts Lando Norris, Nicholas Latifi, and Sergio Sete Câmara do Brasil right in prime position to take the lead of the race. George Russell has to start deep in the field, but by the end of lap 1, he's already up into 5th place. George Russell is a man on a mission. He is not going to be denied this victory.
Indeed.
Man, it's like, I don't know how you'd feel to be pretty much put in a situation where not only you lose the chance of a race victory, but you have to start a race in 12th position.
Shout out to Antonio Fuoco as well. He didn't even get to take the start. He broke down on the dummy grid.
Yeah. Ugh. That was...
And a double DNF for Markelov, his race only lasting one single completed lap.
I didn't see that. What happened with Markelov in the sprint race?
Apparently he had electronics failure.
What is wrong with that Russian time car? Jesus! Yep, Russian time is cancelled too. Get a better car. You are robbing our man Markelov of more fun things. Why did Russian time look like fun things?
Yes, only one half of Russian time is still continuing on for next season. The rest of it is cancelled. So we have a Sergio Sette Câmara in the lead for most of this race, but George Russell is putting on a charge. Norris tries to make a pass on Latifi for position. Russell gets through there. He then gets by Latifi, and he then starts chasing down Sette Câmara, who had a 4-second lead. Câmara starts making mistakes up at the front. And then Russell closes the gap with 5 laps to go. They do a little bit of argy-bargy, a little bit of trading the lead back and forth. Russell just hung back, stayed close to Câmara to get the DRS. Russell blows past him with 4 laps to go and just checks on out.
He does. The pace was there for Russell all along. It was a fairly comfortable win for him in the end. Like, I'm surprised Sette Câmara didn't do what he did to Fujishima in this figure and just run him up right up against the wall, because Câmara is a Câmara is a madman. Like, holy shit. Like,
yeah, like, you could see, like, he has his website and his Twitter handle on his halo because he knows that shit's gonna be on the highlight reel.
Yep, that is a man that knows exactly what he's doing.
And if you are sad about the fact that there is no Brazilians on the grid in Formula 1 right now, you maybe have reason to be happy very, very soon, because Sergio Sette Câmara, the further he steps up the ladder and the more powerful the cars get underneath him, it seems like the better he gets.
It does seem to be, guys. Mm. Very Leclerc-esque, as you mentioned in the past, don't you, RJ?
Yes, also very similar to Carlos Sainz as well. Just please don't try to be her with the final quarter at Macau next time. So out of all of that, George Russell wins ahead of Sergio Sette Câmara and Nyck de Vries, awkwardly there on the podium. Russell and de Vries together again. But where's Sergio Sette Câmara? He's missing from the podium. King, what's happened to Sergio?
Ooh, his car, just shut off.
He did.
Yeah, shut off in the pretty much that last corner before the run down to the finish line. And man, oh man, he hustled to get to the podium.
He was full on sprinting there. After he's already winded from such a long and grueling race, he's just like, please don't leave me behind.
No.
Please, I need to be there. He did get to celebrate on the podium, but it didn't get to last long.
Following the sprint race at Baku, it was found that Sergio Sette Câmara's car had stopped on track as a result of having insufficient fuel to return to the pits. As a consequence, Sergio Sette Câmara was disqualified from the sprint race, promoting Nyck de Vries to second and Nicholas Latifi onto the third and final podium spot ahead of Lando Norris, Arjun Bhatia, Santino Ferrucci, and Roberto Marin and Ralph Boschung, completing the top 8 in the sprint.
Oh, jeez. It's like hard not to feel bad for Câmara on that one. All that running, and he gets a technical DNF. What a bitch. Yeah. that wasn't pretty. But, God, 2 balmy races in Formula 2 yet again. What is it with this track, King, and it just producing bonkers racing?
Again, 2.2 kilometers straight into a 90-degree corner. Like, it's going to create some exciting racing.
clearly Tilk was onto something. Like, even though this was a street circuit, it's like Tilk's got the right idea. Long straights, really tight corners at the end of it. It's like, that works.
Looking at the Drivers' Championship, Lando Norris is still out in front, but his lead is much smaller than expected. He only holds a 14-point lead over Alexander Albon? And Sergio Settecamera's third at 40 points?
That's not the championship I was looking at heading into this season.
Yeah, and in fairness, George Russell has had to dig himself out of a hole. He's 27 points, so he's 28 points back with the next round at... cue the Mercury Montserrat again, Barcelona. It's in 2 weeks' time. George Russell is sixth. Nyck de Vries is fifth ahead of him. Artem Markelov is fourth. But you have to wonder what could have been if not for the two DNFs that he suffered, all none of his doing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. It's a bummer, but it's nice to see that we got to see Russell at his best, especially in the sprint race. That was a phenomenal drive from him on that one. That London trio, or that British trio, is very exciting, as if you would never have guessed by watching Sky's coverage. Yes, Norris, Russell, and Aitken are as advertised, which is obviously pretty good.
Alexander Albon, better than advertised.
Yes!
Sergio Settecamera, likely better than advertised. Nyck de Vries, well, if this McLaren young driver thing doesn't work out for him, he's still got a steady gig in LMP2.
Not a bad place to be these days, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, works for Grand Prix winner Pastor Maldonado.
Just a tad. should we get into Paris, fellas?
Ooh.
Yes. Let's board the plane. And let's head on over to Paris. The Formula E season is slowly winding down. What did everybody make of the Paris E-Prix? I got to watch it in some regards. I'll be honest, I had it on at times. I was severely checking out because it was, compared to the usual fare that we get from Formula E, this one was, Kane, would you say it's more routine?
Yeah, I think the track does not provide for great racing action. Like, it is a postcard race, but I like to phrase it. Like, the pictures look fantastic, but the actual quality is not good. Which is fair, which is kind of why they have it there. Like, there are much, much better locations across Paris that they could host this race, but they specifically chose this because of where it's located.
But what a view.
If you had the choice, given you know Paris quite well, where would you put it?
Easy. There's one place it has to be. The Bois de Boulogne. The pretty much up until this point, up until Formula E came to Paris, that's where racing in the city in Paris happened. That's where the first motor race happened. That's where, after the Second World War, the first race in Europe happened in Bois de Boulogne. Like, it would be the perfect location in terms of history, and also it's a park. It would be like Albert Park. It would be like pretty much all the park circuits that you see in Formula One. It gives you that history standpoint while also providing you a great location for good racing.
I would also be content if they just dropped it in the middle of the Opera Paris track from GT4.
Sure, that works. that works. That absolutely works. I'm here for that. Think of all the pauses into that fast left-hander on the back end of the circuit. That could be fun.
That's going to be extra spicy. So John Eric Verne is very good this year.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. And John Eric Verne is from the suburbs of Paris.
He is indeed. He is a Parisian himself.
John Eric Verne, took pole position in the Super Pole, got a good start from the front row, and as chaos broke down behind him at the end of the race, John Erik Vern never put a foot wrong all race. This is its third win of the season, his third win in the last five races. In fact, this season, he's never finished worse than fifth all year long. And of course, this is his first win at his home track in Paris, which has got to feel like extra good for John Erik Vern.
Oh, like, even if you don't want to watch the race, you have to watch that podium. You have to watch that podium.
Was it any good? I've not seen it. This channel was Five Spike cut it off on the TV broadcast. I've not seen this podium.
Oh my god, that crowd was wild, and the anthem.
Oh, King, your favorite, the French national anthem.
Oh man, that is like, I've never heard an anthem sung that passionately since like Paris 98. Like, it's been a while.
That's alright, break out the football references, it's been that long.
Yeah, it's been that long.
Jesus, 20 years ago, wow. Yeah, but god, that does sound pretty mental. Like, I didn't realise he's one of those guys that just properly belts out the national anthem. That's always Cusco.
Oh no, it was the crowd. Oh, yeah? The crowd were loving it.
Nice. Very, very cool indeed. I mean, it is starting to look like Vern's year, isn't it?
Yep. Because number one, he has, what, a 31-point lead, and we only have four races to go?
It's looking good.
Yeah. It also helps that some of his would-be title challengers are literally starting to trip over other people in the pursuit of a John Erik Vern. Cut to the final laps of the race, which, King, as I understand it, was a bit of a crazy time.
Yeah, pretty much. Despite being processional for most of the race distance, the closing laps, they smelt the blood in the water, they knew the points were on the line, and they decided, guess time to be Daniel Ricciardo today. Try to send it.
Yeah, so for context, Andre Lotter, three-time Le Mans winner and Japanese racing legend Andre Lotter, looked like he was going to carry the second half of a Tachita 1-2 finish, but his energy had been depleting, and Lucas Degrassi and Sam Bird were gaining on him like crazy. And on the final lap, Andre just runs out of power right at the point where Sam Bird has no time to react, and crunch.
Oh dear. It's a rough one. Like, it was even funnier in TV because we hadn't seen the incident first. And this thing, you just see Bird roll past with three wheels on it. So I was like, how did that happen?
Yeah, it's like three wheels and then one is just like hunched up in the air.
It's like, how did that get there? And then you find out what happened. It's like Lotter is just limping and then...
I thought Robin Frins crabbing over the line to finish second at Putrajaya that one year was...
Oh, Lord. I do remember that as it goes. Yeah, that was a thing. God. Yeah, like, so clearly just Bird just had a miscommunication. Just probably just didn't realize Lotter was cruising because of his lack of usable energy. But, God, awful, awful clattering. Lotter was just sloppy all day, really. I mean, that slowing down was bad enough. But when you throw in, like, the fact that, you know, he had a bit of an argy-bargy with Lucas Degrassi in there as well. And there was a big dive bomb in the middle of that as well. Like, there was a right-hander on that track, King, that was just causing all those dive bomb problems. It was crazy.
Yeah, because it was effectively the only, like... The only overtaking place on the track where you felt like you had a chance to go for it.
Yeah, like, Daniel had put it to good use, that's for sure. I mean...
Oh, goodness, did he ever...
Yeah,
that man started 15th, and he came back to finish 7th.
Ran as high as 5th at one point as well. He actually fell back a little bit towards the end. Sebastian Buemi had repassed him towards the end of that race. But, yeah, Apt was picking people off for fun at that corner. Jesus. Incredible drive from him. Also, we talked about the 31-point lead that Vern's now got. One of his main contenders is our man driver for hire, Felix. And just a mediocre sort of day for Mahindra and Phoenix in general. Hey, RJ.
Started 11th, didn't really make up a whole lot of ground, and ended up finishing 8th. This puts him further out of the championship reach, and now he's at a critical point at the championship because Berlin is next. This is a race that he is doing to sacrifice his other full-time gig and another championship that we'll talk about later. And this is really the last roll of the dice, although in fairness, Felix has done well in Berlin before.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he won there in his rookie year.
Yeah, and the reason why it's the last roll of the dice is if he can't close the gap to 75, he's mathematically eliminated.
That would be a problem.
It was all starting so well. We had the two wins in the first three races that easily could have been three. But it seems like the title challenge has just been slowly starting to unravel ever since.
It has, yeah.
I don't know if it's just the fact that the Mahindra is slowing down in terms of its development, or what. I don't know. I'm not a paddock outsider, an insider like certain guests on our show, so I can only speculate. Two retirements in the last four races, though, certainly does not help, including
a driver error.
Yes.
That one he had in Rome was a bad one. Like, he was the only guy taking liberties of the curb there, and it punished him badly. And that, I think, that might have been the real turning point for his season. He did not look like there was anywhere near competitive at the front this weekend in Paris on that one. As mentioned, this was kind of tame for a Formula E race. Formula E races, let's be honest, are a little bit more bonkers than this. We got a little bit of a ruse towards the end, but it never got to full brouhaha like we have in many of these Formula E rounds, unfortunately. But there was an interesting bit of news that our lead man Alejandro Agag dropped, taking about a proposal about a new race format once we get to the Gen 2 cars next year, or next season, I should say.
Well, we're guaranteed to have a new format because there won't be any pit stops next year, because obviously the batteries can last the entire race distance now, and Michelin feel that it's best for their brand if the tires can last the whole race, that they don't have tire changes.
Indeed.
So, for some reason, Alejandro doesn't feel like it's best for business if they just have, you know, flag-to-flag racing. And I disagree with him, but it's not a good look when you're going out there. Like, no one asked him to say this. He wrote a column for Autosport saying that the new format is going to be a video game like format to appeal to a younger audience, ideally around the age of 10.
It's something we're looking at. It would be like Mario Brothers, and you could tell that Alejandro Gag is a casual gamer, because he's probably thinking of Mario Kart, where they get the little star and go faster.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea is there would be like this, it wouldn't be a full Joker lap, it would be something like off the racing line, where if you go off the racing line once a race, you can get the extra power mode, because also rumored for next year, there'll no longer be fan boosts next year either.
Woo!
Oh, goodness. That had kind of jumped the shark after the about the 9 millionth Degrassi apt Buemi.
Probably for the best. Like, they got to spend, like, I didn't realize, like, that half of, like, the app team's budget went in towards buying bots for social media votes. Clearly, money well spent. But yeah, the fan boost is gone. And we're basically getting Wipeout for season 5. Yay!
Yeah,
So,
you go offline and you get to unlock qualifying mode, which the regular race mode next year is going to be 200 kilowatts, and then you go through, you go through this power-up area and you get 250 kilowatts.
That's about 335 brake horsepower out of an internal combustion engine. That's pretty quick.
That is pretty quick.
Yeah.
they've already had talk that Lucas is claiming this car could do over 180 miles an hour at full chat, which compared to about the 140 they can do right now, that's pretty nuts for these electric cars. And
I'd say on like a regular circuit, yeah, it could probably do 180 on a straight, but like there are very few places on the calendar where you'd have enough distance to get up to that.
Indeed, yeah. So that's going to be a drawback, you know. But hey, they insist on the street circuit racing philosophy, as Lucas reminded us during Baku, with the peak that guy tweet of, oh look, I wonder if there should be a series that always races on street circuits. Oh wait, and I'm like, that guy. Lucas is such a that guy, it's not even funny anymore.
But hey, his car was blessed by the Pope.
They were all blessed by the Pope.
That's the joke.
Yeah, it's like, I have no issue with Formula E only racing at street circuits. I just wish they were better street circuits.
Agreed.
Well, most all street circuits and a chopped up bit of the Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez in Mexico City.
No, but people like to ignore that. People like to ignore that.
What would you consider the airport? I mean, that's not really streets.
Yeah, that's not really streets either.
Yeah.
What would you consider this Brooklyn street circuit that we're
going
to?
That's a parking lot.
Finale?
That's a parking lot.
So that's not really streets either.
Yeah.
King's argument is getting nitpicked to death here.
Hey, I'm not the person who says they only race at street circuits.
This is a good point. Shame on you, Lucas.
Sometimes they race it. They race at parking lots. They race at airports. They place it. They basically go at places you. What's a good analogy for this? I'm trying to think here. Do you want to be out on? Do you want to be out on public roads or the airport or a parking lot at 3 a.m? If you wouldn't want to be there at 3 a.m, Formula E will race there.
Is this the Project Gotham Racing of racing series?
That's not that fun.
I'll say it sounds more like a dogging trip than playing PGR4. Jesus.
Yo, all I'm saying is replace the Super Pole with a kudos run to determine pole position, and it's on.
Oh yeah. And it's Lucas on a bike. Look at him drift the tail. He's in the OP bike that has like the easy to drift rear end. So like Lucas wins every week. Oh dear. So hey, we got Wipeout coming to Formula E in season 5. That sounds like a fun time.
Maybe. Yeah, we have a big maybe. Please be maybe.
All signs point to me. Dre, is it too early to put a 50 on Fiasar winning the team's championship?
I don't know. They've still got to go to like 3 more bases for the rest of the season. I think it could be a bit problematic for them towards the end. I would go with the safe money and go with AJ Systems on this one. I hear they've got a new upgrade coming.
Perfect. Perfect. That's great. Smart picking. Remember, please game responsibly.
Should we get into the news, fellas?
Yes.
IndyCar first up, in the middle of what we call rookie orientation season and refresher season for some of the returning runners, as well as orientation for all the newcomers to the series this year. All good news. Everybody that was there today passed the rookie orientation test. That was Kyle Kaiser, Robert Wickens, and who am I missing here, King? Help me out.
Mateus Leist, of course. Don't worry. Don't worry. You weren't the first one to miss it, and dare I say, you won't be the last.
Well,
there was also a scare that Pietro Fittipaldi was going to be replaced. As it turns out, he's just doing his rookie orientation test.
Yeah, later. He's doing it, I think, on the 15th, he said on Twitter earlier today. As mentioned as well, 3 refresher runs as well. Jay Howard driving in Hinchcliffe's car. he's passed his refresher program, as has some woman called Danica, apparently. She's back. Apparently it's a big deal.
Danica back, baby. And most importantly, the number 13 is back, you know, in honor of Ernesto Viso.
Of course. And the GoDaddy is back, which is kind of nice. You know, are you fans of fluorescent green?
The flash bulbs were popping as 400,000 spectators, it was a closed track day, gathered at the Brickyard, and 70 billion people tuned in, and the peak viewership was about 4K, to watch Danica Patrick's first laps in a modern IndyCar in 7 years. Actually doing a respectable job, topping out at an average of 218 miles per hour in her best lap. No dramas there, no dramas. Everybody passed their rookie and refresher test.
Indeed.
Yeah. This May is looking more electable than Teresa right now.
Hey, ooh.
I mean, that's setting the bar pretty much.
Oh,
there, King.
King.
It's on
the floor now. King. That's right in the lung. Oh, God. What are you doing, King? Yeah, King, in the sin bin, like, immediately, please.
I was safe for, like, the last episode. I almost got through this episode. Damn.
You had to go there, didn't you? Like, you mentioned, like, listen, you mentioned Theresa May to me. You're automatically in the sin bin. Like, there's no ifs or buts about this. Ugh, Jesus. Like, King, I'm disappointed in you. I expected better. But there was one intriguing test that we also saw yesterday in recording this. On May 1st, yesterday, Joseph Newgarden, and the windscreen is back. We saw it a little bit earlier on in the year with Scott Dixon testing this out. Dixon was very positive in his thoughts on the aero screen, testing it out in Phoenix on the short ovals. Has there been any comment on Joseph about what he thought of the aero screen since he tested it out yesterday?
From the quote from the official IndyCar website, Joseph said it was fascinating. It was totally different for an open-wheel car. You're not used to having a windscreen that big in front of you, but it was interesting to try it out. The most interesting to me was the visor changes on the helmet. Going from a fully smoke visor to a clear visor was better. It helped with the visibility and the clarity. There's small improvements to be made, especially with the clarity, with the visors, and the perception to see Pruitt. It was easy to make it work. I didn't have many major issues with it, but I think IndyCar did a nice job.
Wow.
Another positive test with positive feedback for the IndyCar windscreen.
Sounds good from where I'm sitting. Look pretty good out there, too, to be honest. I was like, oh.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yep, and also looking good out there, Elio Castroneves and that Penske.
Who, I may remind you, still has magnificent hair.
Magnificent hair.
Oh, but probably the quote of May so far is him pretty much setting out his plans for the month with his hopes of winning the 500 to convince Roger to hire him back full-time.
Oh my God.
He never got fired to begin with.
Oh my God.
I mean, granted, he's in a different series, but he's still part of the Penske family and still a regular member of the Penske
I find...
Yeah, but he wants to be an IndyCar
full-time. I find it amazing, King. This is a guy that's won 3 Indy 500s, but he's so desperate to win the fourth. Not so much to become in that history-making club of 4 winners, but just to get back in the series full-time. In a series he's never won. Like, God bless you, Helio. He's such a nice man. it's like, no, I want that IndyCar title. I want a race full time. What a boy. I love Helio.
Speaking of goings on and the speaking of shenanigans at Penske, the autograph challenge between Simon Pagenaud and Joseph Newgarden has really ramped up to new heights. Joseph found a street named after Simon Pagenaud. So Joseph did what Joseph does, and he signed the Simon Pagenaud Street, signed with his own signature. Not to be outdone, Simon Pagenaud went to Indianapolis Motor Speedway, got some heavy machinery out and some harnesses, and proceeded to paint his own signature on the banner that sits outside the speedway. This giant banner with Joseph Newgarden's face, now signed by Simon Pagenaud.
This challenge has been nothing short of hilarious. It has been unbelievable. Like, I thought Joseph going back in time and signing the underbelly of Pagenaud's car was absolutely genius. I thought, that's not getting topped. And now this. Like, where do you go from here, people? Like, I don't know how you top Pagenaud signing Newgarden's face outside the stadium. Like,
nah, we're not being this. We already signed someone's mom. Like, this is no. Like,
the only thing they've yet to do is do a to sign something at going at full race speed. Like, they're just going race side by side. Oh, and Joseph's just like, hold on a second. Let me unstrap myself here real quick. Drive with the finger. steer this with my feet and put it right over on the fuel tank. There we go.
I have an idea. If Pagenaud or New Garden wins, to sign the Yard of Bricks.
That would just be perfect. A little bit sacrilege, but you know, that's
I don't want to be pushing boundaries here, but like, Joseph, Norman,
sign the dog.
Joseph's got a cat that he has too. Sign the pets.
$2.29 every day. If Joseph signed the dog, I swear to God. If he signed Norman, that'd be...
Actually, let their pets have, like, a paw print challenge.
Paw print challenge.
Honestly, like, if Norman gets signed by New Garden, like, that'd be, like, the equivalent of a dick punch. Like, he's gotta do it now. He has to do it. Like, it would be hilarious. Like this has to be done. I'm here for all of this. Shall we talk a little bit about our old friend of the show in Super GT, Jenson Button?
Yeah, what is JB doing?
Well, he's doing the 24 Hours Le Mans with SMP Racing. He's driving with noted cool guy, Mikhail Lotion, and noted F1 podium finisher, Vitaly Petrov, in one of SMP Racing's BR1 engineering LMP1 non-hybrids.
Team
his
Russia.
Season will not start. Yeah, Team Russia.
Because they're on such great terms at the moment.
And instantly, they're really on such great terms. It's fine. All this to tell you that we're going to have a Fernando Alonso v. Jenson Button showdown at the 24 Hours of Le Mans, and Jenson Button's doing the rest of the super season after Le Mans wraps.
That is lit.
That is pretty, pretty awesome. That's another big name in a LMP1 class, which, by the way, 6 hours of spas this weekend. Fernando Alonso is going to drive 10 races in a span of 11 weeks. He is going to be a very tired man.
Well, he does drive for McLaren, after all.
Yes. And now he gets to pin his hopes on another Japanese manufacturer with a recent streak of heartbreaking mechanical retirements, including ones just before the checkered flag.
Also, he drives for Toyota.
What's worse, peeing in a dude's seat or taking his Le Mans win?
Yes.
So, expectations, thoughts, feelings about the 6 hours of Spa-Francorchamps, the WEC's alleged make Toyota win button. How big is it? Is it comically oversized? Or is it non-existent?
I would say it's like the easy button you get at Staples. It's big enough to just be obnoxious, but it's not too big where you can't put it in a pencil case.
No, I think it's that big, but it also has a glass cover.
Oh, like Deal or No Deal with Howie Mendel. Like, yeah, a little glass lid on there so he can't be pressed by accident. I see. Gotcha. That could be quite obnoxious.
I think Toyota will win this one.
Bold!
They have the advantage of being the only factory team in a group of non-hybrids. I don't think they'll finish 1-2. I think... especially Rebellion Racing and
Rebellion
CEFC TRSM Racing. Let's just agree to call them Manor. They've got two very good cars of their own, and also SMP Racing have a pretty capable driver lineup. I mean, goodness, you got a Lotion, you got Stefan Sarazan, you got a couple of young kids, and Igor Rujev and Mateo Zazakian. Look at the Rebellion, and we haven't even talked about Rebellion lineup. They got Neil Yanni, Andre Lauder, Bruno Senna, Matthias Besch, Thomas Laurent, and Gustavo Menezes, my dude.
Yes, bring us your tired, unemployed masses.
Yes,
Manor's got Oliver Roland, Alex Brundle, and Oliver Turvey in a car.
Yeah, it's looking sweet.
And if that's not your thing, hey, there's still three other classes that you can keep track of, like LMP2, which is looking pretty good. We got actually got healthy competition and diversity of chassis makers. And, of course, the GTE classes are always a good time. And Tony Kanaan is there. Yes, Tony Kanaan is going to the Sit Sours of Spa.
Yay.
So, to our Formula E fan favorites, Sam Bird, Tom Blomqvist, Antonio Felix da Costa.
Got it.
Alex Lynn is going to be there in the new Aston Martin Vantage.
May or may not include screaming.
Sim racing superstar Nicky Tim is there.
Mm.
Not so much other sim racing superstar Fernando Reis because he got cut from his ride just before the start of the season. RIP.
Oh, I was expecting you to say sim racing superstar Scott Speed, but R.I.P. Scott.
R.I.P. Yeah, Scott.
And R.I.P. Global Rallycross.
Also, amazing,
that's been done.
Also, amazingly, not really pouring one out for Fernando Reis and his women shaming antics on Instagram. I haven't forgotten that shit. Bastard. Yeah, it's stacked top to bottom. Like, there's bound to be names you'll recognize up and down the grid, and that should make it a fun time. I may even watch for a couple of hours. Like, that's my yearly.
Whoa, a couple hours, wow.
For me, that's like really bold. It's like I'm not one of those guys that pretends to like endurance racing, but the cars have always been really cool to me, so I'll watch for a couple of hours. Yay.
That's perfectly fine. You can watch for a couple of hours too in the United States on the world the Motor Trend app.
Is that even real?
I guess it's real.
Is that a thing?
What is this? Yeah, the WEC has a live streaming function that traditionally has never worked, so now it is being moved to another streaming site that does not work because the WEC app's streaming services have been geo-blocked in the US and Canada because WEC's got a new television deal with the channel that is soon to become the Motor Trend Network, part of the Discovery family of networks, of course.
Of course. Yay?
Yeah, what? Like, I'm trying to find out what other series Moto Trend On Demand even has.
It's a growing portfolio.
Okay, let's see. Wow, yeah, they have Blanc Pond. If you live in the U.S., that's the only place where you can watch that.
It's all right.
Also, the FIA World Rallycross Championship, the British Rallycross Championship, British Rally Championship, Dakar. Oh my God, they have everything. Yeah, they basically have everything that's not on TV here.
Hmm. Useful.
Yeah, they have. Oh, that's why I can't watch BDRC Formula 3. Okay, thanks, Motor Trend.
Have you got to pay for that in the States?
Yeah, it's not free.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a subscription, much like Motor Trend magazine.
How much is it?
Quick check. It is okay. Free for 14 days. Give me a price. Don't tell me it's free for 14 days. I just want a price. $5 a month.
Oh,
that's not too bad.
Yeah, that's like $60 a year if you just break it down that way, and that's I'll probably spend that in 2 weeks in other unimportant bullshit. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah. That's doable. It's cheaper than Netflix.
Yeah, and they also have like a bunch of like non-motorsports related programming, so it kind of makes it worth it, but
So King, are you sitting down for some British rally?
No.
Yeah. You've heard of Netflix and chill. Now get ready for Motor Trend On Demand and putt in hand. You're welcome, Motor Trend Magazine. You can use this tagline for the low cost of $30,000 directly deposited into my PayPal account
or our Patreon page.
Yes,
yeah. Just give us $30,000 a month for the rest of your life, or as long as Motor Trend like On Demand exists.
Sweet. So, speaking of TV networks picking up stuff, like
yes. There was a big, big hole in NBC's heart, a big Formula One-sized hole, and now it's been filled because IMSA's coming to NBC. They've got all the major American racing championships now. They got a full season of IndyCar starting next year. They've got a half season of NASCAR, and now they have IMSA, all the IMSA championships starting next season as well.
And that's pretty big. That's just taking into account their like big series. They also have, you know, AMA Motocross. They have, and that's pretty much it. Yeah, they also have the rights to Indy Lights, but yeah,
all three of their cars.
oh my God, Trey,
it hurts.
But not technically inaccurate. But cool, IMSA's going to be on more TV. It's like, I love that, like, friends of the show, people like Luke Smith was coming out with quotes like, yeah, look, NBC's got everything except for one other thing that they lost recently.
Him and Tony DeZinno.
The
dream team is eternal. IMSA's going back to Mid-Ohio this weekend. It's the first time they've done that for a while. It's going to be a fun time. Elio's gonna be there.
Hey.
He still has magnificent hair.
He does.
I'm fully expecting a Cadillac win, though.
Yeah.
Although it is much closer than it was this time last year.
That's good, right? Mm.
Yes.
Optimism.
Do you know one series that will be broadcasted live every round on the NBC Sports Network this year? The Red Bull Global Rallycross Championship.
Ah. Now broadcast by a puppet show.
Puppet show.
Now broadcast via iRacing simulations.
Oh my God. Looks like Scott Speed's retaining the championship this year, guys.
Oh no, and Speed has plowed right into the side of Jimmy Broadbent.
No, Jimmer!
Please, though, Punterino Jimmer.
Oh my God, I've been watching Jimmy's Isle of Man TT laps. That has to be like the Dark Souls of bike games.
Yeah.
I hate to use that analogy.
Sin bin, you know, sin true. Bin immediately.
It's true, Dre. You know it's true.
Listen. We do not compare anything to Dark Souls, okay? That's the laziest games journalism guide in the book, okay? We are not tolerating this. We're a professional podcast of professionals. We're not taking Dark Souls comparisons.
I'm just here to defend ethics in motorcycle road racing, okay?
And you use the Isle of Man TT to back up your point, yeah? Sinbin, thank you.
I'm just
that's
saying.
That's fine. I'm just gonna break out this belt saw here to cut my way out.
If we ever hit $150 a month on Patreon, it is all three of us playing Isle of Man TT, no assists.
I'm not sure the world is ready to see that, King.
Yep. All yours if we hit $150 a month on Patreon.
Well, there's a deal, listeners.
To go. Throw us your money. Can we talk about the fact that Martin Truex Jr.'s team busted out a fucking power saw?
Please explain, because it's in capital letters and in the set list, and I'm not entirely sure why.
So Martin Truex Jr.'s car got some damage on it. As it was described in one headline, they broke out a tool of mass destruction, a concrete saw.
Oh.
After Martin Truex Jr. got swept up in a multi-car wreck. The Furniture Row Racing crew picked up the 78 car on the jack, placed a board underneath it, then took the concrete saw right to the panel that was blocking the damage panel.
Yikes. A concrete, like a chainsaw for concrete.
Yeah, something that is designed to cut straight through stone.
That sounds ridiculous.
They did this to get a stuck body panel out. Usually, sometimes you just kind of tug on it a little bit. Maybe you take a hammer to it. No.
Now we got a clock. Now we got a clock. We don't got time for this.
No. Like listen. Right. There's levels to this. Like, there's levels for like RJ just described it. It's like you go from a tug to a power saw designed to cut through stone. Surely there's levels to this. Have I gone crazy? am I listening to this right? Jesus Christ.
You're saying that because NASCAR made it into a GIF.
Bring me the GIF. I'm watching this now.
Oh,
dear God. Is Jeremy Clarkson operating that? That seems...
I'm thinking of Matt LeBlanc with the power washer.
Oh, God, yeah. God, from that the rebooted series that we don't talk about anymore. Oh dear, that is a that is an image. Yeah, lads, we can't tug it anymore. Get the power saw out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Was this what they had in mind when they came up with the 6-minute time limit?
Yeah. We'll make the sport nice and safe by having them break out one man power saws in the middle of the paddock. What could possibly go wrong?
Famous last words.
Next thing you know, Tony Stewart's lost a leg. It's not.
Oh my God!
Jesus Christ!
Yeah, listening to Jeff Gordon and Darryl Waltrip and Mike Joy just be like, I've never seen this before.
There's a lot of things DW hasn't seen before.
It's true.
Oh dear, oh dear. I can't believe we just spent nearly 4 minutes on this podcast talking about the fact that NASCAR has chainsaws now. I'd love this show.
Yeah. And also Joey Logano won the race.
Oh, him.
Lol.
Oh, that guy from the Penske Games. Gotcha.
Yeah. The guy who did an exceptional job in the NASCAR Drivers Only broadcast the day before, which I thought was very entertaining, and I'm thinking, you know how college football during the playoffs has the coaches' room, and NASCAR now has the drivers only broadcast where they do an Xfinity series race. I'm kind of thinking, why don't we just get a panel full of Formula One commentators to call a Formula Two race sometime?
Oh my God, that would be glorious.
That'd be hilarious.
Yo.
Max Verstappen's just like, I don't know any of these things. I never raced here.
No, I need Leclerc and Grosjean right now.
Look, it's me, Romain Grosjean, and here's my son, Charles. RJ, tell us a little bit about Super GT before we get out of here.
Yes, the Autoback Super GT Series races this Friday morning, or Thursday night, depending where you're sitting. It's the Fuji 500 kilometers. It is 110 laps. It is a big race on a holiday week in Japan known as Golden Week. The Golden Week race at Fuji is always the most attended event of the calendar. And with Jenson Button now in the picture and coming off of his first podium finish of racing in nearly 5 years, they may break 100,000 for weekend attendance.
Wow.
And that's a lot. Yeah, they drew 90,000 last year. This is a perennial biggest drawing event, even bigger than the Suzuka 1000. Things to watch for this race, GT500, so very close. Lexus, Honda, and Nissan all seem to be on even footing in GT300. This is very much a power track, so a lot of the GT3 cars that you're used to seeing everywhere else in the world, they're going to step to the forefront. But the teams that don't have as much power, but a lot more aero, they're going to also try to be clever and use a strategy to win this. We've also got some new faces making their series returns or series debut. Obviously, Kamui Kobayashi and Kazuki Nakajima won't be there because they're at Spa. So James Rossiter and young Shosu Boy, who has been on fire in Formula 3, is going to be making their series, their GT500 debuts. Team to watch out for is the number 38 Zent Lexus team, Sarah Mokar of Yuji Tachikawa and Hiroki Ishihara. Tachikawa's won at Fuji 8 times in his career. Ishihara's won this race 3 times to account for the majority split of his 5 career GT500 wins. Oh, by the way, a win at Fuji also propelled Ishihara to his second Super Formula title in the last 3 years. Safe to say this team is quite good at Fuji Speedway, a track which is owned by Toyota, so Lexus are under big, big expectations to win this race. Like I said, it is Friday morning for most of us in the US and UK. It's going to be a midweek race, and I think you'll definitely enjoy it. So tune in to that on Nismo TV, chat to send to Tidelights and Jets and Buttons channel. And of course, in a shameless plug, definitely check out Daily Sports Car for your pre- and post-race coverage of the
event. Apparently some guy writes for them.
Yes. Also keep your eye out on a special feature on the 1998 Fuji disaster that happened 20 years ago, and the story of how Tetsuya Ota survived one of the most horrific crashes of recent memory, and how his fellow competitor Shinichi Imaji basically ran in and saved his life.
Jesus.
This is new to me. I need to learn.
Yep, looking forward to...
That will be up by the time you listen to this episode.
Awesome. Awesome. Can't wait to see that. Guys, should we get out of Dodge?
Yes, I'm tired.
Yeah, me too. Let's wrap this shit up. Places you can find us one more time. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. Check out the Dre Briefs. They're good, they're wholesome, and they have my voice in them in even more clarity now. If that alone is not worth watching, I don't know what is. Facebook.com/motorsport101. Twitter, at motorsport_101, at Harrison101HD, at Ryan Eric King, at RJ O'Connell. And don't forget to back us on Patreon if you really like us. Patreon.com/motorsport101. Don't forget to check out Bike Live as well later this week. We're still not sure what we're going to do because none of the big three are racing this weekend. We'll figure something out later. hopefully by the time this goes up, we'll have gotten that sorted out by then. Just a force. That's about do it for us on this episode. Thanks very much for listening if you haven't already. And yeah, that'll do it. So from me, Andre Harrison, from Ryan King, and from RJ O'Connell, thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Later, y'all. Bye.
You are the world champion! Seriously though, you go straight from Tug to Power Saw?
Tug to Power Saw.